ask not.
The Beatles.
Circuses on the air.
And the president does it.
Sometimes you feel like
that means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you don't.
Tear down this wall.
Here's Johnny.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Oh, we're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
China's been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
Well, let's talk about this. 1847, the Chicago Tribune begins publishing. But founded in 1847 and formerly self-styled as the world's greatest newspaper, which, hello, WGN Radio and WGN Television stand for world's greatest newspaper.
World's greatest newspaper.
It remains the most read daily newspaper of the Chicago metropolitan area in the Great Lakes region. It is currently the eighth largest newspaper in the United States by circulation. It became the second largest under Tribune's ownership after the Chicago Tribune's parent company purchased the Los Angeles Times. The Tribune was founded by James Kelly, Johnny Wheeler, and Joseph K.C. Forrest, publishing its first edition June 10th, 1847.
I remember when they had the 150th anniversary a few years back now, that the article pointed out that that first edition, unfortunately, doesn't exist anymore.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first edition, don't know what was in it, you know, what the news of the day might have been. I know that I found some editions going back to the Civil War era on microfilm at the library.
Wow, that's cool. Wow.
You know what I found? What'd very quickly? I found the Chicago Tribune edition reporting on Abraham Lincoln's remarks at Gettysburg.
Wow.
You think about that.
But 1847, it's just a shame that so much of this content is no longer available. And I'm going to say this on a completely lighter level, because I've talked about this before, is in broadcasting, there's so much content that's no longer available or doesn't exist anymore from the days of radio to television. That's why I joined the Broadcasting Museum Board almost 15 years ago, actually, is to help preserve some of the stuff. But like, you know, we talked about the first, like, Bozo is not available. There's newscasts that are legendary, iconic newscasts that don't exist from the 1940s and 50s, and in radio even earlier than that.
Things weren't recorded. The recordings weren't saved.
Yeah.
It was harder to do that, you know, in the earlier years than it is now.
Yeah.
But, things weren't preserved and weren't saved as they are today.
Yep.
And as they say, as easily as they could
be saved today. That's absolutely true. Early 1922, President Harding had a radio installed in the White House. At the time, radio was the hottest technology there was, and the White House was on the cutting edge. President Harding was also the first president to use radio, dedicating the Francis Scott Key Memorial in Baltimore, live on the air.
And that was before the what we now know the national anthem. That was before we had a national anthem,
isn't that
actually
something?
Yeah, because it was Herbert Hoover that signed the legislation making the Star Spangled Banner our national anthem.
That is correct. All right, the Chicago Tribune in 1930, involved with Al Capone here, reporter Jake Lingle is killed during rush hour at the Illinois Central train station by the Leo Vincent brothers, allegedly over $100,000 U.S. gambling debt owned to Al Capone. So this is Chicago Tribune reporter Jake Lingle, dead, 1930.
And here we are laughing about it.
Well, I mean, but I mean, it was all due to a gambling debt. Think about $100,000 in 1930.
But still a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. That's a crazy amount of money. Baseball Hall of Fame opens in Cooperstown, New York. Here, let's pod that down, buddy. Baseball Hall of Fame opens up in New York in 1939. Another passion of yours, Dave.
Yes.
Just over 40,000 three-dimensional items, 3 million books and documents, and 500,000 photographs. What was your favorite part of visiting that museum?
The favorite part of it was just the fact that there's something for everyone there. There's something for every team in Major League Baseball, some sort of historical memento, if you will. I think the media section was also, there's a whole section devoted to the great baseball announcers, radio and TV.
Oh,
of course,
that.
I sought out Jack Brickhouse, Harry Carey, and another person who's in and who played a very important role in not only broadcast media, but print media, and helping Jackie Robinson ascend and get into the what we now know as the mainstream of baseball, Wendell Smith, who was a broadcaster here on WGN.
Right, yeah. Very cool, Dave. Love that. Love that. You are a walking encyclopedia, my friend. I'm going to step back a little bit and talk about 1933. And Richard Hollingshead, Jr. of Camden, New Jersey, was a creator of the Drive-In Theater. Hollingshead's Drive-In opened in New Jersey on June 6, 1933. I am a very big fan of the Drive-In. I actually wrote an article for Nostalgia Digest magazine. We have Steve Darnall on once in a while, but I just love the Drive-In. You go there and you're literally playing football in the parking lot with other kids. You're playing ball. You're meeting your neighbors. It's people from every walk of life at the Drive-In. The concession stand, I will tell you, they have not touched it since 1972. But it's cool. But I love it. But I love it. It just gives, I feel like a kid when I go there,
yeah.
And the sound quality is really cool and everything. I've got a couple little audio clips. One is of the Drive-In intermission that I want to share with you.
Please replace your inner car speaker before releasing brakes or starting motor.
And by the way, they play these.
Back out.
These classic
still
ones.
Play them?
Absolutely. Before and during the intermissions, yeah.
And now, for those remaining, it's intermission time. Time for that stretch you've been wanting. And best of all, time to take your pick from that scrumptious array of tasty treats waiting for you at the snack bar.
That still have been there since 1972.
Yeah, exactly.
The cold drinks are sparkling. The hot dogs are sizzling.
Or sparkling.
The coffee is steaming. And a luscious treasure of your favorite ice cream flavors as you like it.
I love
sir.
It. How classic is that?
And
that's
so
great. We had a couple drive-ins in Northwest Indiana where I grew up. One was right at the intersection of Ridge Road and Indianapolis Boulevard, or rather Klein Avenue, right at the Highland, Indiana, Griffith, Indiana line that was there for many years. And then out in Merrillville, Indiana, there was the Y&W drive-in. And were both cool.
I loved going to the Twin in Wheeling. That was a big deal to go there because I did it as a kid, and then we'd load up the we had a cottage up in Wisconsin, so we'd blow up the life rafts and put them in the trunk of the Gran Torino station wagon, and then pop open the trunk and watch movie. And then in high school, we'd hide in trunks. Of course, to
oh,
get
sure.
in so that you had
oh,
two
yeah.
people. And it was always two guys in the front seat, and I know they'd be like, what the hell is this? You know, but we would get through for whatever reason, you know. Especially after you're drinking and you're sitting in the trunk of a car. It wasn't very pleasant, let me tell you. But it was a blast.
It was a rough ride.
It was a rough ride. And my folks tell me about the Harleman Forest Preserve. There was one over there, too, that we used to go to, I guess, when we were younger kids. But there's about 400 left in the country. And I know the West Chicago one, they almost had the land sold from under them. And now I think they extended the lease. So they'll be around for a long time to come. Here's another one. Here's another clip. It's great. It's about selling cigarettes at the drive-in. Let's take a listen.
Guess what? Guess what would taste good right now to everyone in the car?
Cigarettes? Here they are.
The favorite of young and old alike.
Cigarettes. Here they are. I love that.
Come on down. And
everyone in the car, even the kids. Because they're going to get some secondhand smoke anyway. All right. 1965, Sonny and Cher make their first TV appearance. What show do you think that was on?
65?
Yeah.
Ed Sullivan?
It was not Ed Sullivan.
It was not Ed Sullivan.
It was American Bandstand.
American, sure.
And this is the song they sang.
Baby Don't Go.
Baby Don't Go.
Yeah.
Wasn't I Got You, Babe.
I Got You, Babe, right.
But if you watch the video of this, it's amazing. She's like 17, 18.
She's that young?
Never had
Oh, she was way younger than Sonny.
Than Sonny?
Oh, yeah. Oh, he was a cradle robber, yeah. Talk about some hippies. There they are.
Yeah.
1976.
Some flower power there.
Yeah,
on
you
the
betcha.
Set.
Okay. You betcha. 1976, The Gong Show premiered on television, of course. J.P. Morgan, Jamie Farr, Artie Johnson, Rip Taylor, Phyllis Diller, Anson Williams, Rex Reed, the regulars, Chuck Barris.
Farr was on The Gong Show?
Always. He was a regular. He was a regular on that
show. In the 70s. That was before...
No, that was during
MASH. Yeah, okay.
It was during MASH.
Yeah.
That was his side job. Yep.
Okay.
1978, Grease premiered.
The movie did.
The movie did with John Travolta.
And Olivia Newton-John.
John, of course.
How
yeah.
well I remember.
Think about that as a summer blockbuster.
It was.
I mean, that was a big deal. And it's still big on Broadway. And I think it was on Broadway before it was in the movies, but it's still big on Broadway.
Yes, it was a Broadway show before the film was made, yes.
Yep, yep. 1985, pretty tragic. Coca-Cola announced they were bringing back their 99-year-old formula after they took that big risk and introduced New Coke. Remember that?
Oh, yes.
Why would you do that? That is still probably one of the most biggest marketing product blunders in the history of America.
That and the Edsel.
And the Edsel, we'll put that on that list.
Have you ever seen the story about the Edsel, why it was named that?
Uh-uh.
Edsel was the first name of Henry Ford's son or grandson. Mm-hmm. That was his first name. And the company insisted that this new product, this new car that they were going to make, made by Ford Motor Company, of course, it was going to be called the Edsel. I saw an interview with a marketing guy or a PR guy that worked for Ford at the time. He said, every test marketing, or every what we now call a focus group, maybe, that they would run that name by, they didn't like it. But
wow,
doesn't matter. This is going to be the Edsel.
Wow.
And it lasted not quite 3 years.
Yeah, it was barely 3 years.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. 1993, Jurassic Park opened, setting box office weekend records. They made $502 million. It was the first movie to hit that mark. 2004, on a more serious note, American actor and the 40th president of the United States, Ronald Reagan, died June 5th, 2004. As funeral was held at the Washington National Cathedral. Let's listen to a original news report.
The death of President Reagan sets off a week of ceremonies and remembrance and services during which his body will lie in state in Washington prior to burial in California. Tonight, Tom Brokaw has a look back at an extraordinary life.
As a boy, I saw streets filled with Model Ts. As a man, I have met men who walked on the moon. I have not only seen but lived the marvels of what historians have called the American century.
And there you have it. There you have it. The late Ronald Reagan.
All right, it's Sunday morning. Time for Walter's Perspective, sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com.
How often do you find yourself saying, "Oh my God, how can this be happening? I can't believe it." For me, not often. But I'm saying it now, oh my God, I can't believe that two no-trouble Chicago immigrants, Grandma Betty and Grandpa Carlos, inside their home, were arrested by immigration police, handcuffed, and taken to a federal weigh station in Wisconsin, then to a county jail, then deported to Columbia, leaving behind their daughter and granddaughter, scared to death and desperate to know how Betty and Carlos are doing. Betty is a Lutheran pastor, set to begin work on her doctorate in theology. Carlos, an engineer. 15 years ago, they escaped a treacherous civil war in Colombia and arrived in Chicago. Been here 15 years without so much as a mark on police records. Now they have and love and care for a granddaughter. It's hard for me to even imagine all this. A beautiful, peaceful immigrant family suddenly torn apart, shredded into pieces by our government in Washington, possibly never to see each other again. Having been deported, Betty and Carlos are not permitted to return to the U.S. Their daughter Paula and her daughter Layla, 5 years old, are on DACA status, not allowed by our government to leave the U.S. From way up at the top, the President of the United States of America, the Vice President, the Attorney General, the Secretary of Homeland Security, members of the Congress, federal judges of the immigration courts, and the immigration police of the United States of America. They're terrorists. How can they do what they're doing to that family? How can we allow them to do it? I can't believe it. I'm Walter Jacobson, and that's my perspective. For more, visit WGNRadio.com or download the WGN Radio app.